Hello, my name is Danny Flood. Thank you so much for listening. This audio interview is brought to you by Open World Magazine, the ultimate guide for living the adventurous life.
My name is Danny Flood, and I'm here today with a gentleman by the name of Zeke Camusio. And super excited today because Zeke is one of the most knowledgeable entrepreneurs that I know. I've been following his business adventures for a while. Initially met him through Mixergy. And after listening to a few of his interviews there, I was like, this is somebody I got to get in touch with. We have so many things in common. Zeke, why don't you introduce yourself and give a little backstory?
Sure. So my name is Zeke Camusio. I'm living in Portland, Oregon, but I grew up and was raised in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I've been living in the U.S. for the last 7 years. I've been living in Portland for the last three. I consider myself a serial entrepreneur. I had 8 companies. I sold 3 of them, and now I'm running 2 companies. One is called Windcatcher Technology, and it's basically we developed this new inflation technology that works with pretty much anything that is inflatable. So if you can picture a sleeping pad for camping or a sleeping mattress for home, we figure out a way to inflate those products 10 times faster, and we're licensing out our inflation technology to companies that manufacture those products. So we basically just get a percentage of the revenues they get. My other company is called Digital Aptitude, and it's a digital marketing agency. So what we do is we use the internet to help our clients grow their businesses. So we take a very strategic approach. We think about, where they are now, where they want to be in 12 months, and we help them put together a strategy to get them from where they are now to where they want to be a year from now.
How many clients have you worked with up until now?
I think it's about 150.
150?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I guess one of the things that makes Zeke special to me is he's one of the most knowledgeable guys I've met when it comes to marketing and advertising, and I'm real excited to have him on here. Just a great guy to boot. We met for the first time a few weeks ago in Portland and had a good time. So for this interview, I was talking to one of my professors last week, and you know he was like really down about the future. He was kind of like, you know, he's been in advertising for 30 plus years and he's worried about his children and their future. And it seems like the prevailing talk these days is about how, you know, college graduates are getting $10 an hour jobs and feeling lucky to have them. You know, they have twice as much debt as they did 20 years ago, and upward mobility is at its lowest. And, Zeke, in this climate, how do you think someone stands out? How would they stand out in this climate? How would they get ahead?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know if I have an answer for you. I mean, I think everybody needs to leverage their, because I don't think there's an answer that fits every person out there. I think that you have to figure out what your strengths are. I think that overall you have to be more intentional about what you want out of your life and how you go about getting it. You know, you have to figure out, number one, what your strengths are, number two, what there's a need in the market for, and number three, what you're really good at, because if you don't have the skills to pull it off. That's part of it. The other part of it is, I feel like the most common thing that I see in entrepreneurs is that they spread themselves too thin. You know, they have a very short attention span. They do something for a little bit, they get tired, they start doing something else, or they try to be, all things to all people. And that's, I understand where that comes from. You know, you're like, you know, if I narrow down my focus, I mean, wouldn't I have, fewer clients or a more narrow target market? But if you put yourself in the shoes of the consumer, like, for example, if you break your knee, would you go to a knee specialist or a general practitioner, right? If you want, like, I'm from Argentina. If I want Argentinian foods, would I go to an Argentinian restaurant or a restaurant that has Argentinian foods plus foods from, like, 10 different countries? So when you think about the issue as a consumer, you want specialization. You know, you want companies that understand who you are and what your needs are and that serve people just like you and not just everybody. So I think that's part of it, you know, specializing in, instead of, you know, with the internet these days, it's very easy to find a narrow market to go after and learn, you know, learn about them, learn, you know, what they, you know, what their needs are and how you can solve those needs better than anybody else in the world.
What's the best way to do that, Zeke?
Ask some questions, you know, like, for example, I think that, you know, 10 years ago, you could be a landscaper, right? I think now you'll be a lot more successful to be a landscaper if you specialize in, I don't know a lot about landscaping, but, you know, it could be flowers or, you know, like, you know, doing the landscaping for event venues that, you know, require a different level of sophistication. So I think that that's part of it. And once you understand your market, you know, just keep asking questions, you know, keep getting feedback and, you know, tweaking your business model to serve that audience better than anybody else.
So specialize in a niche and serve them better than anyone else, basically.
Yeah, that's one of the routes you can take. You know, the thing is that I think that most entrepreneurs, especially you know, younger entrepreneurs, they look for things that are easy to do.
Right.
And they're easy to do for you. They're also easy to do for everybody else. So everybody is trying to get into, like, spaces where there's so much competition. You know, it's not just you. It's like 10,000 people out there.
Right.
So another way you can, you know, you can be very successful is by trying things that nobody else is trying. I'm a big fan of innovation. I think it's very difficult to sell something that 10,000 other people are selling. But if you're the only person selling something, then, you know, you're going to have a much better chance at success.
It's good advice, and it's so easy to get overwhelmed when you're a first-time entrepreneur or just trying to do anything different. In my book, I talk a lot about alibis and alibi-itis. You know, how people will come up with a convenient excuse to not do what needs to be done or not get started. You talk about trying to do everything. You know, how do you combat that that urge? I mean, besides talk about specializing, but I'm talking about, like, you know, mentally, inner game wise.
Well, I mean, I think we all face this. I mean, all entrepreneurs, we wake up every day and you know, we don't have a steady paycheck. You know, we have to figure it out. Like, there's always issues that we have to deal with. You know, in Argentina, we have a saying that is, like, if you like dogs, you better like fleas. And I think, you know, it just comes with a dog. And problems comes with being an entrepreneur. You just, like, I think that if you're employed and if you're working for somebody else, the downside of that is that, you know, you could get fired anytime or you don't really have a lot of control over your life. So it's definitely a trade-off. Being an entrepreneur, there's a lot of uncertainty. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, you know, next month, let alone next year. So you have to start understanding that it's not comfortable. You know, but if you want to be an entrepreneur, I mean, it comes with it.
Right.
So, yeah.
There was a quote from a Gary Vaynerchuk book. I think he said he has no understanding why, when you're 18 to 30, why you wouldn't try to do what you're passionate about. Because he said the real question is what happens when you're 70 and you look back in your life and you're like, why didn't I try? You know, and he kind of hammers home that regret factor. That, you know, parents and guidance counselors don't really consider when they advise you when you're in your 20s and 30s. You know, why didn't I take a chance? Why didn't I go for it? And I'm just curious. I wanted to ask you recently did an entrepreneurial camp for high school students as well. What would you say was the main advice that you gave them?
Well, I basically told him that basically the way it works is we spend the whole week with high school kids that want to start a business, and we give them advice. So the main thing I told them is, guys, you're going to get out of this as much as you put in, and you're going to get as much out of me as you try to get out of me. So if you're constantly asking questions and coming to me with, different ideas, and you're looking for feedback, you're going to get a lot out of me. But if you're, just like on a corner working on something, or, just playing games, it's the same for high school kids as it is for us adults. Some people are, real entrepreneurs, and some people kid themselves and they think they're entrepreneurs. They keep, finding, as you said, excuses not to do it. It's like sometimes they feel like they don't know enough, so they have to read more books, or, my experience is that, my opinion is that life is too short to half-ass anything. Either do it or don't do it. But stop lying to yourself. Like if you've been trying to do something for years and it's not taking off, it's time to like have a real conversation with yourself about why it didn't happen, whether you're willing to take the necessary steps to make it happen, or maybe take a different route. I mean, being an entrepreneur is not for everybody.
Yeah. And would you say a lot of people, especially young people, maybe they lack confidence as well?
Yeah, and confidence is, to me, the most important thing you need. And I think it's kind of like a spiral. It's an upward spiral or a downward spiral. Let's say you have a sales call with a client and it goes really well and you close the sale. You're going to be really pumped up for the next call, right? But if you blow the first call, for the second one, you're not going to be, very motivated. You're going to be, bummed out. So, and the most important thing is knowing how to reverse that trend. When you're finding yourself, losing battle after battle, it's a self-fulfilled prophecy because you're losing, you lose your self-confidence, but because you don't have self-confidence, it's difficult to win again.
Right.
So what I found, at least for myself, is I need to have a small win. And that small win helps me reverse the trend. So if I had, a couple of bad days and things are not working out, I'm like, okay, what's a small win that, will help me get back on my feet and, get that confidence restored?
Right. That's great. Kind of start that winning trend again, huh?
Yeah.
I think what's powerful for me, too, is using pain motivators as well. Whenever the fear or the pain of not taking action is greater than taking action, basically, it's like, what if I make these cold calls and I get horribly rejected? I feel terrible, but isn't it more painful, if I my kids don't eat, if you have kids or some pain motivator that can light a fire under your ass.
And I think, that's a very good point. I like 2 or 3 years ago, I found that every time, my agency lost a couple of clients, and we were, struggling financially. That's when I went out there, started selling the heck out of everything because the need was so great. And then we got to a point where we were financially comfortable, but I wanted to keep having that same motivation. So I think that the way you could have that while you're winning is by creating some sort of accountability for yourself. It is really hard to be accountable to yourself, so I highly recommend that you're accountable to somebody else. So find some accountability partner, and, the two of you can hold each other accountable. The way I like doing this is I like defining my goals for a quarter. So the way I do things is I think life is like a highway. Let's say I want to go from Portland where I live to New York City. I know I need to start driving east, right? I don't know exactly if I don't have a GPS or a map, which most like which entrepreneurs don't, because like we're you know making our own path. But I know that if I keep driving east, I'll eventually get there. So I feel like you need to know you have to have some sort of idea about what your destination is. But you're not going to see the whole road. You're going to see the next mile.
Right.
So you're going to see the next steps. And then once you drive a mile, you'll see the following mile. So that what I like doing is I use vision boards, which I know you're very comfortable, comfortable using. I think you mentioned you used them in the past for yourself. So I do vision boards, and, you know, every 3 months I'm like, okay, what do I want to work on for the following 3 months? Because 3 months for me is like the equivalent to that, you know, next mile on the road. So it's like, what do I want to work on in the next 3 months? And then I write all my goals, and I normally try to do 3 to 5 goals, so 3, 4, or 5. And for each goal, I have different tasks with deadlines. So, for example, let's say that one of my goals is to increase the revenue for my agency by 20%. It's like, okay, so what do I need to do this? And then I have the different tasks. So it could be, you know, buy a list of prospects to call. Number two, call such prospects, right? So and then I have deadlines for each thing. So basically, the difference between goals and tasks are that goals are something that is quantifiable and very specific. Like, you know, increase revenue by 20% by October 31st, for example. Tasks, on the other hand, always start with actions. So it's, you know, do this, read this, call this person. You know, it's always an action that will help you get accomplish a goal.
Yeah, that's great. I kind of use something similar where I create systems. Have you ever read Work the System by Sam Carpenter?
Yeah.
Yeah, so everything I want to do that I take seriously, because I'm just like you, I have goals in all these different areas, you know, and sometimes I'll work on one for a while, and then I'll move to something else, and I'll forget about the other one. And what I'm really trying to get after, or get on myself, you mentioned accountability, is manage repetition. So, you know, increasing in an area by making it a habit, and, you know, like I have a bunch of different things I want to do, like I want to learn, you know, Mandarin, Chinese, you know, I want to travel to this place and do all these things. But then I also have my career goals and my business goals, and it's hard to, you know, give priority to one over the other. So I'm just trying to, you know, take all those tasks that you mentioned and kind of create a procedure out of that and kind of like an overall objective. You know, I want to go east to New York City. You know, I want to have a 20-minute conversation with a Mandarin Chinese speaker. And so I have to, you know, practice, take these video tutorials twice a week, whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I mean, you mentioned something that is very true, which is, you know, goals change. I mean, what I wanted 3 months ago is not what I want now, and what I want now is different from what I want in 3 months. Right. So that's why I feel like quarterly goals are really useful, because if you're changing your goals, you know, every 3 months, like, or if you're like, if you can keep your goal for at least 3 months, you're not really, you have a severe case of ADD, you know, you're not, it's, you have to at least work on something for 3 months. You know, if you're, you know, serious about getting those results. But, you know, let's say, you know, like right now, I'm a rugby player right now. The season's starting. That's a big deal for me, and that's something I really want to work on. And I want to, you know, get in shape, well, stay in shape, and, you know, like. But in 3 months, I'm actually leaving the U.S. for a month and a half to travel around South America. So my goals for those 3 months will be different, and that's fine. I mean, you don't always have to work on the same things. I like the you know, the idea of reassessing goals every 3 months. But what I think is really important is that once you set goals for yourself, that you actually go after them. I mean, it's such, and going back to confidence, knowing like that after every quarter, everything that you said that you were gonna do, you actually do. that gives you so much confidence, knowing that quarter after quarter you're knocking it off the park. You know, like you're doing everything you promised yourself you are going to do. I mean, that's how you start building confidence. And that's why I said, you know, if you're not used to doing this, if you're, you know, if you're in reactive mode and just, you know, putting fires every day as opposed to being very intentional about your life, if that's the kind of mindset you're in, I would say that you have to, like, slowly transition into being more intentional by getting that small win that I was talking about. So maybe it's like, okay, set a goal for the next 10 days, you know, and just do it. And, you know, and that will give you the confidence to, like, maybe do monthly goals. And then you'll be ready to do quarterly goals.
What are some examples of small wins?
Well, I mean, it depends on what your goals are. I mean, for me, like, to give you an example, like, two weeks ago, I realized that I was, like, you know, I was just leaving stuff around the house, and my house was, you know, a mess, you know, just I wasn't doing my dishes. Or so for me, it's you know, a small win, because, I mean, work, I love work. I'm excited to come to work every day. I mean, it's not challenging for me. I mean, it's challenging, but I love doing it. But stuff around the house, I hate doing it. But, you know, I want to be respectful to my wife, and, you know, I want to do my part. So, you know, a small win for me was putting stuff in the dishwasher right away. I mean, it depends on what your goals are. You know, 5 years ago, maybe one goal for me was to, you know, finish, like, the copy for a website for, you know, like, one page. You know, maybe that's... You know, or you know, if you're saying you're gonna, I feel like people make a lot of decisions that are they think that it's like white, black or white, right? But sometimes, you know, there's a lot of space in between. So maybe you don't have time to write the whole copy for your website today, but you do have an hour to, you know, write a first draft for one of your pages. You know, so right. Start there.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, if you're gonna wait until the conditions are optimal, it might never happen. You know,
right? And everything that you've done, that I've done, that anyone done, it all starts out as an idea, and that's all it is in your head. You know, it starts out as that, and then you make it reality. And I wanted to ask you, I have your book here with me right now, the Internet Marketing Bible, and a few of my friends bought it as well, and they speak real highly of it. That's a goal that you couldn't complete a book in 10 days. How long did that take you, and how did you have a process that you used for writing the book?
Yeah. So basically what I did is I hired someone to help me write it for me. I wrote the book like maybe 4 years ago, and my English wasn't the best at the moment. So what I did is I basically created the layout of the whole book, and I recorded all the different sessions. Like, I basically just, you know, send all my notes to a professional writer and had her write it for me. So I think it took me like a month to do my part, and it took her like maybe 2 months to actually write the book.
Wow, that's really good. And how did you find her, and how much was that?
I can't remember how much it was, but it wasn't too much. It wasn't too expensive. Basically, what I did is I went to Costa Rica for 2 months just to write the book. I actually cranked it out in the first month, and then I had a whole month for just, like, to enjoy Costa Rica. So it was nice because I didn't do anything else that month. I just wrote the book.
That's fantastic. Did you have any resources that you used, like, to learn how to do this, or did you just did it?
You just broke up. Can you repeat the question?
Oh yeah. Did you use any resources? Did you read any books about how to write, or you know, how to do this process beforehand, or you just decided this is how I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I just went for it. I didn't really read any books or anything.
that's great. And what have been some of the results? I mean, I'm sure it's been I know it's a great asset for you. You used it as kind of like a business card.
Yeah.
It's probably helped both you with your business and other people as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had two goals for the book. The first one was to help us get new clients. So as you said, you know, I use the book as a business card. When I meet with someone, if I think the book will be helpful to them, I just give them the book. I never really tried to, like, make money off the book. It's very difficult to make money off a book. You get, like, you know, $4 or $5 per unit you sell. So you have to sell a lot if you want to make, you know, $100,000 a year. That was one of my goals. And the other goal is I realized that a lot of business owners were feeling overwhelmed by all the content out there about online marketing. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's all explained. Like, nobody took the time to explain it in business terms for the business owner and make it, like, super simple. So that's, I found that, like, the most of the content that was out there was very technical, and business owners, you know, couldn't really relate to it. So I tried to, like, you know, create a bridge between all this technical stuff and bring it down to a level that, you know, any business owner could understand it.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff out there is very expensive too. Not only do they overwhelm you, but just like one SEO course, you might shell out $2,000 for it, right?
And I don't really believe in spending money that way. I think it's a waste of money. I think that there are I'm all for investing in yourself and investing in learning new skills, but I think that there's a lot of stuff going that has been going on in the internet marketing world. You know, like, people make money by selling courses on how to make money, and that's how, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. I think that when entrepreneurs or, you know, wannabe entrepreneurs are, you know, making money their top priority, they keep struggling because the focus is, you know, how can I, you know, benefit myself, or how can I make money? And I think that the right way to think about it is, how can I create so much value for my customers that they're happy to give me money? So it's a subtle difference in perception, but it makes all the difference in reality.
Yeah, I cover that quite a bit in the book about how to deliver value. Can you talk about how do you deliver value? Like, what's worked for you? Being an entrepreneur, it's like, so everything's up to you, you know, like, you have to, no one's telling you what to do. You kind of, like, have to create value out of thin air, basically, right? Like, I met with a potential client last week, and, you know, I kind of talked about what we had to do on his project, and he asked me for, like, a budget, you know, and I said, you know, well, there's a difference between a $1,000 and, you know, $100,000 as far as quality is concerned. And he said, I was about to quote him at about $5,000, and he said his budget was about $10,000, before I said anything, you know. and I want to feel like, you know, how can I increase my value so that it's worth what the client pays for? Any ideas? Or, you know, like, I've looked at some of your proposals, and some of the packages that you offer. Some of the different price points that you offer, and I think that's a big part of the game.
You were breaking down, but I think your question was,
Zeke?
Yeah.
We had a connection issue for a second there. Sorry. How do you increase the value of your services and the perceived value and whatnot?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to start with a goal in mind. And the goal in mind is that the client needs to feel like they're getting a lot more than they're giving you. Okay, so that's the top thing, you know. So it's, you know, there's no formula that works for all businesses, but I think that there are two things. Number one, you have, like, every decision you make has to be based on the framework of you know, what's best for my client. So every time you're making a decision about, you know, how to structure your business, and, you know, it's like, okay, what's the best way, what will work best for our clients, you know? So that's part of it. And the other part is, I think it's really important to talk to clients about, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs are very afraid of asking for feedback. Because they, you know, they're afraid of what they could hear, you know. But I think that, you know, what's the alternative, you know, to be blind to what the what your clients really really feel, you know. So one day they could, you know, call you and tell you, hey, I'm going to cancel because you're not providing any value, or, you know, or hey, I hate your product. Or most people won't tell you anything; they'll just stop buying from you. So I think it's really important that, you know, we are, as entrepreneurs, we reach out to them and we ask, you know, the most important thing when you talk to clients is asking good questions. You know, if I ask, are you satisfied with your purchase? They'll just tell me yes, so I go away and stop, you know, bugging you. But if I frame it this way, I tell you, look, Danny, it's really important to me to make sure that you feel like you're getting a ton of value for the money you're paying. And I'm always looking for ways to do what I do better. So what are some ways I can improve? So by asking the question that this way, I'm already assuming that there's something I could do better, and I'm asking you what it is.
That's so hard to do for any entrepreneur, because it's hard not to take it personally, because you put so much of yourself out there. Anytime you create something.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I think part of it is just removing your ego out of the equation and understanding that your mission is not to be the superstar. Your mission is to provide a great service. So if you, you know, you have to understand that you're doing some things great and some things that are, you know, not that good. So the two options you have are to continue doing things this way, or to keep asking people how you can do things better so you can improve. And, you know, the only downside I see is that you'll be bummed out for, you know, like 15 minutes when people tell you their feedback. But, you know, it only hurts the first, you know, 10 times you hear it. After that, you know, you're just used to it, and you understand that that's part of the process to improve whatever you do.
Right. One time a client told you to take a hike because you told them something you didn't want to hear, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I'm just laughing at, because it sucks to have people tell you that stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I used to be, I used to really hate feedback, but I love it now, because it's like, you know, they're telling me exactly what I need to do to provide more value, to be better at what I'm doing. So I love it now, and, you know, I don't take it personal. You know, there's there's what you know you don't know, and there's what you don't know you don't know. So there's a lot of stuff that I know I don't know anything about. There's stuff I don't even know I don't know. So I want to hear what they have to say, because they're going to give me ideas I could not possibly come up with myself.
That's great. About developing strategic alliances. And you give some great suggestions about how to develop strategic alliances. By the way, anyone that hasn't read his book, go pick it up on Amazon. It's the Internet Marketing Bible. A lot of great marketing advice. How much is it right now? Like $9.99 or something?
I don't even know, but yeah, it's under $10, I think.
or visit his office in Portland. I'm sure you can get a copy for free, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the ways that you develop strategic alliances? Like, you know, in the book I talk about the advice you shared during our mastermind call, how you meet a lot of people for lunch, use the Portland Business Journal to develop contacts with successful entrepreneurs, and just approach them and say, hey, I'm Zeke, you know, I run this business locally, Digital Aptitude, and I'd love to get together and exchange some ideas with you. What are some of the other ways that things that you've done that have worked and what hasn't worked?
So I think that there are two different kinds of networking that I like to do. One kind is very unintentional. You know, I like meeting people, and I'm not really trying to get anything from it. I really enjoy meeting people, learning about their stories. I feel like I become a better person the more people I know, and the more diversity I find in the people I meet, I think it just helps me become a better, more knowledgeable person who really understands the world a little better. So that's a personal interest I have. And I've gotten clients and other alliance, you know, like partnerships from doing this, but I never really try to get anything from it. If I'm talking to somebody and they say, you know, they mention someone who's really interesting, I always ask if they can make an introduction. And then I take those people out for lunch or, you know, to grab a cup of coffee or go, you know, see their business or whatever they do. This is just a personal interest they have. And again, I don't really have a goal behind it. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is a more intentional strategy for business development, which is creating strategic alliances. So what I look for normally is other companies servicing the same market with a different product. So for example, like if we're a digital marketing agency, one of the best matches for us is companies that do web design, because, you know, they do web design when they're done building a website. Now it's time to start marketing. So, and we don't do web design ourselves, so it's a good way for us, you know, to refer clients to them, and then they can refer clients to us. So again, we go after the same audience, but with a different product.
And how do you structure a alliance with a company like a web design firm?
I don't believe in paying referral fees. I believe in referring people to companies that, you know, will be able to help them. And I don't do it because I want to get paid a commission. I do it because I feel like I like making connections when I feel, you know, it's valuable for both parties. So I never offer any type of compensation. I never expect other, you know, companies that I partner with to get any compensation from me. I just like understanding what other people do, you know, learn about their work. I always ask, you know, what kind of clients do you work with? What's your price range? What's the ideal, the ideal client for you? How would I know if somebody is, you know, needs your services, but maybe they don't know it? What's a trigger that will help me understand, okay, this person needs, you know, to talk to you? So I try to, like, you know, understand, you know, what kind of people I should be connecting them with. And then I explain what I do, and I show our work. And I really like having people come to our office and meet our team. I think that the most valuable asset we have as an agency is our people. We have a terrific team, which you've had a chance to meet. One of the things that sets us apart as a marketing agency is that we're very, very good communicators. That's the number one complaint people have about marketing agencies, that they're, you know, in the dark as far as, you know, what's going on, what they're doing for them, and they're not really involved in their campaigns. So our clients are really involved in their campaigns. We're working with them on a, you know, on a daily basis, you know, touching base, you know, every day or every other day. So, we found that we have such a great team and such good energy around the office that it's nice to have people come over and just meet the team. Because I feel like really what we're selling is ourselves, you know. And when you sell people, like, the, you know, when the other people can get to meet them in person, that's when you can, you know, show your product the best way.
And you have, what, 6 employees now?
Yeah.
How did you make the leap from just you to hiring your first employee and then bringing on a team?
It was just a decision I made. I just realized that what got me to where I was wasn't going to get me to the next level. So that's very common with entrepreneurs. They grow and then they plateau and they just stay there for a while. And, you know, they keep, you know, hitting their heads against the wall and don't really understand why. But really it's, you have to understand that, you know, what gets you from, let's say, 0 to 50,000 a year is different from what will get you from there to $250,000, which is different from what will get you from $250,000 to $1 million, and so on. So exactly. I just realized that the business I had set up was good for making, you know, $100,000 a year, but I wanted to start, you know, growing the company, and I just couldn't do it by myself. So with the kind of with the agency type of business model, you have your revenue here, and then your expenses. So normally you have and the difference between both obviously is profit. So when you hire someone, you increase your expenses, but your revenue doesn't go up right away. So you're eating out some of these expenses, and then you have to increase your revenue, and then you can hire the next person and so on. So yeah, that's basically how it happened for me.
Yeah, and it's a difficult transition for a lot of entrepreneurs to make. I talked to a client a couple days ago, and he's ready to grow his business. He's got about 200 to 300 clients, and he spends most of his time in customer service. And he says it's a catch-22 because he wants his clients to feel like, I'm always here for you. You can call me anytime, but he can't focus on the things that he has to do to grow his business. He can't, focus on sales and marketing. And he wants to hire people to handle the customer support. But then he feels like, I got to train somebody for a month and then they could just leave,
Well, I mean, the way I see it is that just because you can do something better than anybody else in your company, it doesn't mean that that's what you should be doing. Right. The way you have to think about it is, you have a limited amount of resources yourself, and mostly it's your time. So it's like, what's the best way for you to spend your time to help grow your company? So, I'm probably, one of the best communicators we have here at the agency, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to be, on every call with the clients. I can't do it. I mean, the best way for me to add value to the agency is to work on the strategies for all our clients, set up the strategic direction for the company, making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. So, I understand it's very hard to delegate because, it took me a long time to get good at it. But what you have to understand is, first of all, you can't delegate unless you have the right people in the bus. If you have B players or C players in your team, you have to let them go. You can only work with people you trust and they're reliable and they're really good at what they do. Number two is when you delegate something to somebody, you need to give them direction. You can't just say, build a house. You have to say, okay, I want you to build a house, and this is what I want the house to look like, and these are some houses I like, these are some houses I don't like, and these are the checkpoints I want you to take. First, I want you to show me the house. First, I want you to show me the blueprints. Second, once I approve this, I want to see, the core scheme that you pick. So you have to, it's delegating well. It's not very easy. You have to know exactly, how to communicate what you're looking for, and how involved you want to be in the process. At which steps people should check in with you to show you what they've done so far, so you can give them feedback.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but if you don't have the right people working for you, It's just a waste of time. You can do a great job explaining to them what you want, and they'll screw it up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say the third thing to keep in mind is when you delegate, you have to let go of if you're a perfectionist, you have to let go of the details. I mean, I remember, you know, like I used to ask my employees to like do reporting for our clients, and then I'll go into them and, you know, just correct a few words or, you know, like format the titles a little differently. But I'm like, you know, why am I even doing this? I mean, clients don't really care. I'm a perfectionist. Is this the best way for me to spend my time? Right. I think that when you delegate, you have to understand that other people do things differently. Doesn't mean it's worse. It just means it's different.
Yeah, and I think it's a big mistake that a lot of people make, a lot of entrepreneurs make, is that they'll delegate or they'll outsource, and they're not the expert, and they don't really know what they want. So they'll hire someone, you know, that's cheap for like $3 an hour in Bangalore to market their website, basically. And they have no idea what they're doing or what their contractor's doing. That's a huge common mistake. Like, if you're going to delegate anything, you got to be the expert or you can't expect much.
And to me, that goes back to what I call wannabe entrepreneurs. I mean, people who wear their 4-hour work week and they're like, yeah, you know, they just play. It's a game for them, but they never make any money because all they're focused on is how they can run the business as cheaply as possible as opposed to make as much profit as possible. So in everything in life, you know, you get what you pay for. So, yeah, I met with an entrepreneur the other day, and his first question was, you know, what's some free ways to market my company? And I'm like, there's no free ways to market your company. Like every different way that you can think of either takes money or time, and neither of those are free, you know. So if your goal is to run a company for free, I mean, you should just get a job, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think David Ogilvy made a great quote. If you're choosing your advertising agency based on fees and not the return on your advertising, then you're looking through the wrong end of the telescope, I think is the metaphor he used.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So I want to ask you this because we kind of talked about a lot of different things. Do you have like a not-to-do list? Like, you know, I talk a little bit about the productivity paradigm where I have identify, you know, high lifetime values, high dollar per hour value activities, low dollar per hour activities, and zero negative value. Do you have a list of things that like you won't do under any circumstances, or?
No, not really. What I do is I have a quarterly goals list. So every day I say, okay, what can I do today to what are these tasks can I work on today, and those are my priorities for the day. And normally, what I do is I take a sheet of paper, I draw a horizontal line, maybe 20% into the page. So I have, you know, enough room above the line for 3 or 4 priorities, and below the line goes everything else. And the way I work is I always take care of the priorities first, and only when I'm done with those, I go into the other tasks and take care of those. That, you know, helps me stay focused on the priorities and be in a more proactive mode, and, you know, it helps me, you know, complete the goals that I set for myself every single quarter.
Got you. And also you mentioned that, I think in an email to myself and a few of my friends, you mentioned that you had 4 tools that you use to accomplish 95% of your goals, basically.
Yeah, so one of the tools is, yeah, this list of quarterly goals that I talked to you about.
Okay.
The other thing I like, and the second one is the daily, list of tasks with the priorities on the top, and then everything else at the bottom. The third tool that I use is what I call today's wins. So every day, at the end of the day, I write the wins for the day. It could be little things like, you know, finished a proposal for a client, or it could be something huge like closed a massive sale. But whatever, doing this reminds you, I think that as an entrepreneur, we're always looking for, you know, what the next steps are. And that it's good to have perspective of how far you've come so far, not only focusing on, you know, what you haven't done yet. So, I mean, thinking about the wins for the day gives me that confidence that, hey, I'm making progress. You know, I did a good job here. You know, I'm doing great. And that, you know, that way I wake up every day feeling motivated and knowing that I can tackle any, you know, any challenge that I set for myself. And finally, the fourth tool is a list of affirmations. So affirmations are positive statements. Like, for example, let's say you wanna work out in the morning. So, you know, one of your affirmations could be, I wake up excited to work out. I know that working out makes me feel healthier. I know that after working out, I feel proud of myself. And when I feel laziness, when I wake up, I understand that, you know, it will pass within 10 minutes and then I'll feel very proud of myself. So I, when I feel that, I push through. So basically, affirmations are you, instead of saying, I want to do this, you already write it as if it's already happening. So, for example, like, I'm going to pull a list of my affirmations here to tell you what's on my list here.
Okay.
So one of my affirmations is dream big. I understand that everything is possible if it's broken down into actionable tasks. I'm realistic. I see challenges as opportunities for growth in doing fun problem solving. I don't cling to a setback-free journey. I love playing the game of business, and I understand it's a chaotic game by nature. So, you know, for me, it's like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was, you know, feeling frustrated because, like, there's always some sort of problem that, you know, needs to be solved. And, you know, so one of my affirmations is, like, I accept that this is the nature of the beast, and I'm okay with this, and I thrive in this environment. So, and what I found with the affirmations is that, you know, between 20 and 30 days, I feel like I really nailed it down. Because what I do is, this is the first thing I read when I wake up. So this sets my my mindset for the whole day. And what I found is that within, you know, 20, 30 days, I already mastered some of these affirmations. So I take them off the list or move them, you know, back down on the, like, down on the page. And I always have new affirmations. So every time I have a new challenge, I write an affirmation to help me deal with a challenge.
Yeah, that's great. And you kind of unveiled a big secret there where you said you write as if you're already doing this stuff now.
Yeah.
Because I think when someone writes out, I will do such and such, they're kind of postponing it and delaying it. And if you say, like, you know, I am doing such and such, it builds your confidence and it gives you the drive to start acting on it now, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, I think that we give our brains too little credit sometimes. You know, I think our brains are a lot more powerful than we think. And most of the things that are setting us back are just like thoughts in your mind. Like, for example, like I used to be very lazy, and then I just, you know, and most people are like, okay, I'm lazy, and that's, you know, that's who I am, and I can't change that. But that's bullshit. I mean, you can change anything you want about yourself. So I'm like, okay, so one of my affirmations at that point was, you know, I'm extremely proactive, very energetic. I wake up excited to do work. And it's weird, but, you know, within a couple of weeks, you start feeling this way. And after that, you know, you just change yourself. This is what neurosurgeons call neuroplasticity. So it's basically, we used to believe that brains were this thing that could never change. But what scientists found is that, you can actually change your brain, and not just your thoughts or feelings, but you can actually change the composition of your brain by, you know, rewiring your software, the way they call it. So it's
right.
you can change anything you want about yourself. It's definitely not easy, but nothing, in my opinion, nothing worth anything in life is easy.
And in the beginning, everything inside of us is going to say, you know, no, I don't want to do that. Whenever it's like a new behavior or something, you know, the only way is just to push on and overcome that internal resistance, right? Because I like to use a metaphor of a rocket ship taken off into space, where you know, 90% of its energy is just in the initial takeoff. It expends 90% of its energy defying gravity, and then once it starts moving, the movement becomes almost effortless and requires very little energy.
Yeah, it's like they say that it takes 30 days to create a new habit, and I believe that that's true. Whatever you try, I mean, the first few days are going to be very hard, and then it's going to become easier. But I think that the most important thing is that, you know, you're honest with yourself, and a few years ago, I was drinking too much beer, you know, and that I wanted to change. So I think that part of it is like we're always every single person in the world lies to themselves. I mean, it's a fact. We tell ourselves what we want to hear, so we're in a comfortable position. So for me, you know, like all my friends were drinking beer all the time, and I like beer. I like, you know, partying. So, you know, for me, it was very easy to tell myself, you know, hey, it's not really a problem. Everybody's doing it, right? So, but that's where you have to. Something that I found very useful for me is to find a devil's advocate within yourself. So find some for example, in this example of, you know, drinking too much beer, you can find both of these people in yourself. The one that wants to keep drinking as much beer, and the one knows that drinking beer is not good. And have those two people like argue in your head, and you know, really, I mean, it works because we, Carl Jung, he's a very famous psychologist. Actually, he passed away long ago. But what he said is that we all have different characteristics of different people in our personality. So we have the guy who is like, who wants to be very healthy and wants to like live long and have a very healthy lifestyle. And we have the guy who wants to, you know, party every night. So have those two guys talk to each other and reach an agreement as far as, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. So that's what I feel is very hard for most people, just being honest to themselves, because they know if they have that honest conversation within themselves, they'll have to make some serious changes. And that's what, you know, that's why most people like decide to just, you know, look the other way and try to ignore the problem.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, there's all kinds of schools of thought out there, like the fact that we have three separate brains, the triune brain theory, where we have the reptilian brain, the paleo-mammalian complex, and the neo-mammalian complex. And, you know, one is people argue in this theory that the paleo-mammalian and neo-mammalian brains were actually developed in our evolution afterwards. And our primal instincts are just to follow the lizard brain, you know, the reptilian brain. Which I think you can see, if you believe in the theory of evolution, you can go to the zoo and you can see, you know, monkeys in their natural, just, you know, sitting around eating bananas and just kind of hanging out. You know, that seems to be like the natural instinct of that base primal brain. And so that's what I think of when I think about, you know, you having this conversation in your head and you know, saying like, look, I want to be as lazy as possible. But it's more important for me to act on the goals I want because I want to make a difference in life.
Yeah. And you know, one of the most important things is like when you start being honest with yourself, one of the things you tell yourself is that, you know, time is limited. I mean, we all have an expiration date. So every day you spend, you know, being miserable and, you know, living your life that is, you know, like you don't have to have everything today, but if you know that you're working towards what you want, you feel good about yourself because you have a purpose-driven life. So if you know that you're supposed to be doing something else, if you're doing something today because that's what you have to do, I don't know. I think that that's where, being honest with yourself and, understanding that, time in this life is limited. And,
right.
If you waste a day, that's a day it's gone and you'll never have again. I think that's part of it. I think that with any decision you make, you have to think about the alternatives. So it's like, maybe starting a business is a risk, but what's the alternative? I think that's a good way to think about it.
And Tony Hsieh talks about the three P's of happiness, pleasure, passion, and higher purpose, and talks about how the last two are much harder to attain and to realize, but they provide the most lasting happiness. And I think with that conflict, as far as our brains are concerned, the reptilian brain is kind of all it understands is pleasure, basically. Pleasure in the here and now. How do you train a monkey by, offering it bananas? And it doesn't comprehend the following your passion and aligning your actions to a higher purpose.
Yeah. And we talked earlier about having a conversation with yourself. I mean, one of the most useful things I found is having a conversation with myself in 10 years. So, or 10 years or whatever, time in the future is appropriate. So, for example, if I want to eat, two pints of ice cream and a bag of Cheetos, it's like, right now Zeke wants to eat all this, but how is Zeke, 2 hours from now going to feel about this? And I'm going to, from experience, I'm going to feel like crap. So I'm not going to do it. So it's part of, again, being honest and talking to that future version of yourself about, what's the best decision. And, for eating Cheetos, maybe it's like you want to talk to the version of yourself in 2 hours. But if you're talking about, making a career choice, it's like, what will Zeke from 2018 will think about this? And, let's have a conversation with that version of myself, with, the present me and, the future me, and, figure out what's the best route to take.
Right. Well, you've shared so many great things in this interview. I wanted to wrap it up here soon, but there's something I have to ask you about, which you mentioned in the introduction. You've created you have a new product, Windcatcher, and you recently conducted a very successful Kickstarter campaign. I think, I'm looking at the page right now, and you really covered your bases on this. You guys raised $149,000 within a month.
Yeah.
That was just this summer in June 2013. And the pitch that you guys put out there on this Kickstarter page, it's one of the most comprehensive I think I've seen of any project. Like I said, you really covered your bases. So how did you go about doing this?
We did a little bit of what we call reverse engineering. We looked at other successful Kickstarter campaigns. We started looking for patterns, trying to understand what makes a good successful Kickstarter campaign. I mean, what kind of things campaigns had in common, and what we can use for ourselves. We also started looking at what unsuccessful campaigns were doing and trying to pinpoint why they weren't successful. Especially campaigns with great products, but that didn't really raise their goals. So I think that's kind of important. I mean, we didn't really copy anybody's ideas, but we took a lot of inspiration and we learned a lot about what makes a good campaign, and then we just did our own thing. But with a lot more guidance as far as what worked for others in the past.
So what were some of the commonalities? I can guess at some of them. I mean, you got featured in, looks like all kinds of industry blogs.
Yeah.
And you put that, it's at the top of your Kickstarter campaign. You got videos, you got a unique selling propositions. Why don't you tell the listener what Windcatcher is and what it does?
Sure. So we Our original idea was to create a like, if you ever go camping, most people sleep on a sleeping pad because sleeping on the ground is very uncomfortable. So the problem with those sleeping pads is that it takes forever to inflate them. Or you need a pump, and it still takes forever, but now you have to carry a pump. So it's really inconvenient. We developed a new product that uses a new inflation technology. Basically, the way it works is you blow into the valve, and when you blow into a regular valve for any inflatable mattresses before wind catcher, what you had to do is like transfer your air from your lungs into the mattress. And this is very ineffective because the only air going into the mattress is the air in your lungs. But when you use wind catcher, what actually happens is as you blow into the valve, all the surrounding air gets sucked in. So every breath you take gets amplified 12 times, which makes your product 12 times faster to inflate. So my partner Ryan is the one who came up with this idea. I had nothing to do with it. I'm helping him, bring this to market and growing the company with this great idea we have. But he's the inventor. He's the one who came up with this. So that's what Windcatcher is. And you were asking about Kickstarter. So basically, yeah, what we did is one of the things we learned from seeing other Kickstarter campaigns is that people who have backed other projects in the past had a better chance of getting funded because they were perceived as being supportive in their communities. We also saw that videos were crucial. You need a really good video. We also saw this as, people don't really care so much about your product per se, although it has to be a good product, but people care about your story and, what they want to help entrepreneurs get their products out there. So you have to tell a bit about your story and, how you came up with it and, basically say, hey, guys, we need your help. Just basically talk to the community as people who could help you, not just customers.
That's great. Did you guys have a target goal when you started?
Yeah, our goal was to raise $50,000, and we raised $150,000. So, yeah, wow. We did pretty good. The other thing we did is we put together a list of all different bloggers and journalists that would be interested in writing about this. And as soon as we raised the first $10,000, we started reaching out to everybody. And we did a lot of very good research. Not only did we pull contact information, but we also pulled information about what kind of things people like to write about and what their hobbies are and what kind of things people are tweeting about and posting on Facebook about. So that way, when we, reach out to a blogger, we weren't just saying, hey, we have a new product, check it out. We're saying, things like, hey, Danny, I love the blog post you wrote about this great camping product. I especially like how you show this in the video. And I'm following you on Twitter. I figured you'd be interested in this. And, it's like them. You know what kind of stuff they write about. And then when you reach out to them, your message is very customized. So we did a lot of due diligence. I mean, we were very prepared for this campaign. We didn't just put it out there and hope for the best.
Right. And did you have email templates that you used that you just customized or?
We have basically the second part of the email was just a 2-sentence paragraph that we use for all the emails that we send out. But the first 2 paragraphs were always just personalized for the person that we were reaching out to.
Gotcha. And how many people did you reach out to?
Like 200.
200 bloggers?
Yeah.
Cool. So what's next for Windcatcher?
Well, I can't really talk too much about the details, but let's say that 5 of the 8 largest air pad manufacturers in the world are ready to license our inflation technology. So right now we're in negotiations with them, trying to figure out which of these five companies would be the ideal partner for us. So yeah, we're in conversations with these five companies. We should have two or three deals closed before the end of the year.
Wow, that's amazing. So you guys are going to license it to them?
Yes.
Will that still be under the Windcatcher brand, or will they...
No. Basically, one of the things we're trying to negotiate is that, let's say, you know, Agme company licenses our technology. We're asking them that they say this is an Agme product, you know, powered by Windcatcher. But, you know, it's really up to them. It's something we can really enforce. I mean, we're talking to some companies. Some are really excited about doing this. Some not so much because they want to appear like they have their own technology. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen at this point. It depends on what company will license the technology to.
That's great. So you guys can basically take your pick, huh? You got these companies fighting over you guys, would you say?
Well, for the most part, yes. But you know, like whichever company we end up going with, it's important to us that we put together an agreement that is beneficial for both parties, because we're looking for a long-term partnership and not just, you know, one-time deal. So it's not only about the money; it's also about finding a good partner that will get the technology out there in a way that is in line with our goals for our company.
That's great. What an amazing story. Congratulations on your success so far and your ongoing success with that.
Thanks.
That's been fun. Thank you for everything you've shared as well. This has been a killer interview. You've shared a lot of great stuff, Zeke. In this book, I really want to talk a lot about not just the how, but also the why. And I was kind of hoping maybe you could share some of the coolest things you've had or that you've done as a result of your success. I know you've traveled all over the world to pretty much every continent, right?
Yeah, I've been to every continent. I actually counted a few months ago, and it's been 72 countries so far.
72?
Yeah.
Wow. And what are some of the coolest things? What are some of your favorite experiences, you know? What's the most fun you've had?
I don't know. I have a pretty cool life. I mean, pretty much every day is, you know, exciting for a different reason. Sometimes I get to, you know, travel and, you know, hang out with friends from all over the world. Some days I get to go, you know, jet skiing or, you know, freestyle skiing, or I'm a rugby player, so I play a lot of rugby. Some days I just get to work in cool stuff. I don't know if I have, you know, one experience. Something I really enjoyed is when I was 27, I took 6 months off. I bought I went to Europe, and I got a train pass that was, you know, unlimited trips within Europe. And that was a lot of fun, you know, because you didn't have to go through security. Traveling by train in Europe is amazing. I mean, you see some of the most beautiful landscapes, and it's really easy. You just go to the station, and you see, you know, where, like, what I would do is, like, I didn't have an itinerary. So I just go to the station, look at the board, and see the next trains. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to London or Paris or Madrid. So that was kind of cool to, like, improvise and just, you know, like, figure out, you know, one day at a time. I think that was one of the coolest things I've done. And I can also think of a lot of trips I've taken with my rugby team, you know, just like, I don't know, those guys are a lot of fun, so it's always fun to travel with them.
That's great, and I think you make the most out of every day as well as anyone, Zeke.
I try. I mean, some days are easier than others, but I feel very blessed and lucky. I mean, My parents gave me, you know, a very good opportunity to, you know, like, get everything I wanted growing up. And not everything I wanted, but, you know, they gave me a good education and, you know, they paid for school. And So they gave me a lot of opportunities that a lot of people don't really have. And, you know, I'm, you know, healthy and, you know, I'm very thankful for, you know, where I am. And I work my ass off for sure, but I've also been really lucky in my life. So it's, you know, I think luck is a very, very big factor, and I've had a lot of it, so it's good.
Filled with gratitude, right?
A lot of it, yes.
Yeah, and also, I wanted to ask you one other thing about the Europe trip. You also managed your business while you were traveling, right?
Kind of. I mean, I at that moment, I only had one employee. But he was taking care of like 80% of everything. You know, I would just take my email every day and just do a little bit of work. But for the most part, I was working maybe, I don't know, 10 hours a week. And it was mostly just work I could do on my own, around my own schedule. So, you know, things like writing blog posts and stuff like that didn't have to happen at a certain time. So I could just accommodate my schedule to my travel schedule. And I would normally work on trains themselves. So that was awesome, you know, just being on a train high speed from, I don't know, Paris to Switzerland and, you know, being able to work on the train with, you know, high-speed Wi-Fi and, you know, just, like, listening to music. I mean, that was a lot of fun.
And just with that limited amount of work that you were doing, you were able to provide enough revenue and income to make that trip and spend 6 months there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think that's one of the biggest things is that, you know, that stops people is I can't afford to, you know, travel to Europe for 6 months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it took me 3 years to get to the point. I think most people give up, you know, sooner than that. So I think there's a lot of rewards for all of us who are willing to be persistent and never give up.
That's great advice, Zeke. Thank you so much for this. Is there anything that you wanted to add or any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave people with?
No, not really. Just have an honest conversation with yourself about, you know, what you want in life and what it will take for you to get what you want. And just make an agreement with yourself about, you know, what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do, and then just do it. You know, just like whatever agreement you like, you can actually sign an actual agreement. You know, write down what you're, you know, what you're gonna be working on, and just sign it, and just like have it, like stick it somewhere where you see it every day. And you know, it just doesn't. It takes time. Nothing happens overnight. But I think that for me, I always had a very clear vision of the kind of lifestyle that I wanted to have. And it took me, you know, 4 or 5 years to, like, get to the point where I, you know, could do everything that I wanted. It takes time, but, you know, if you know exactly what it is that you're trying to accomplish and you work every day intentionally on the goals for the quarter, you know, you'll get there eventually. It's just a matter of time. So, yeah, just, like, don't give up too soon.
That's great. Thank you so much, Zeke. This is a great interview.
Yeah, you're welcome, Denny.